This information is designed to provide accurate and authoritative information with regard to the subject matter covered. It is offered with the understanding that the presenters are not engaged in rendering legal, accounting, or other professional services. If legal advice or other expert advice is required, the services of a competent professional should be sought.
Welcome to the Real Estate Financial Planner Podcast. I am your host, James Orr. This is episode 14. Today, we're going to continue with Norm and Norma's story. Norm and Norma are obsessed with achieving financial independence. They are methodically considering a variety of strategies to get them to financial independence as quickly and safely as possible. In the last 8 episodes, Norm and Norma considered the following. In episode 6, they considered investing in stocks with no real estate, not even a place for them to live in themselves. They rented instead. In episode 7, they considered buying a home to live in and otherwise investing in stocks. In episode 8, they considered renting themselves but buying 10, 20% down payment rental properties. In episode 9, they considered renting themselves but buying 10, 25% down payment rental properties this time. In episode 10, they considered renting themselves but buying 10, 15% down payment rental properties with private mortgage insurance. In episode 11, they considered buying a home for themselves to live in, then buying 10 rental properties. And we covered 15% down with PMI, 20% down, and 25% down all in one episode. In episode 12, they considered renting themselves but buying 10 short-term rentals with more rent than traditional year-long leases. And we covered the 3 down payment options in that episode, 15% down with PMI, 20% down, and 25% down. And in the last episode, episode 13, they considered buying a home to live in with 5% down and then buying 10 short-term rentals. Again, we covered 3 different down payment options for this too. Except for the first couple episodes where they invested in stocks, I'd consider the other 6 episodes to all be examples of utilizing the traditional buy and hold real estate investing strategy. Now we're going to switch strategies again, and Norm and Norma are going to consider what we call the nomad real estate investing strategy. So what is the nomad real estate investing strategy, and why would they even want to consider it as a possible means to achieving the end of financial independence? The nomad strategy, in its most basic form, is 1, buy a home as an owner-occupant. Now, this is usually done with little or nothing down using traditional owner-occupant financing, like getting a nothing down USDA loan, a nothing down VA loan, a 3% down conventional loan, a 3.5% down FHA loan, or a 5% down conventional loan. In most cases, they will have private mortgage insurance, also known as PMI, because they put less than 20% down. But they also tend to get much better interest rates on the loans, even taking into account the private mortgage insurance, than they could get putting 20% down as a non-owner-occupant because they are buying the properties as an owner-occupant and moving into the property for a year. Step 2, live there for a year. To get the very attractive owner-occupant financing with the lower down payment amounts and the lower interest rates, they must move into the property. Usually, the lender requires you to move into the property for a year, and they will require you sign a form at closing when you get the loan, with you agreeing to do this as a condition of you being able to get the loan. There are some very unusual exceptions to the requirement to live in the property for a year, but Norm and Norma plan to honor the agreement they're making with the lender, and you should plan to live in each property for a year too if you're considering this strategy yourself. They could get roommates while living in the property, what we might call house hacking, but we'll discuss that in a future episode. Step 3, after living in the property for a year as an owner-occupant, they buy another home to live in. Now, usually they can use the rent on a signed lease that they're getting from the property they're moving out of to help them qualify for the new purchase. And if there is positive cash flow as defined by the lender, it actually helps them qualify. Now, if there's negative cash flow as defined by the lender, they will need to use income from other sources like their job to qualify for the new property and cover the negative cash flow. Step 4, they move into the new home, move out of the home they lived in for a year, and convert it to a rental property. Now, they will usually need to move into the new property within 60 days to have it qualify as an owner-occupant property. Step 5. Repeat this process until they acquire as many rental properties as they desire. While there are limits on how many conventional loans you can have when buying a non-owner-occupant investment property, usually 10, you can always get another owner-occupant property provided you can qualify with your debt-to-income. And that's it. Those five simple steps are the basics of the Nomad real estate investing strategy. For Norm and Norma, they plan to acquire 10 properties total using the Nomad strategy, including the 10th property that they will continue to live in. So they'll end up with 9 rental properties and 1 owner-occupant property. Each property they've lived in for at least a year. Each property they purchased with a 5% down payment owner-occupant loan with private mortgage insurance. Now, in previous episodes, just like in this episode, it took Norm and Norma time to save up enough for down payments, closing costs, and reserves to buy their first property. They're only starting with $10,000 in savings, and they're saving about $1,000 per month. So even to save up enough for a 5% down payment property, it takes 33 months for them to save up enough to buy their first property. Plus, they're not immediately renting out any owner-occupant properties they buy right away. For the Nomad property, they don't even rent the first property until they bought the second property. But if they could buy a 5% down payment property as an owner-occupant and rent it out right away, how would that compare to them buying a non-owner-occupant rental property? Let's take a look and see. First, let's look at how much each of the properties appreciates in the first year. Since the properties are all the same, all 4 of them, regardless of down payment, go up in value the same dollar amount, $11,250. If you looked at return on investment, they'd have different numbers since each one had a different down payment amount and slightly different closing costs. But as far as the number of dollars that each one went up in value, it is the same regardless of down payment. How about we discuss cash flow next? If Norm and Norma only put 5% down on an owner-occupant purchase, and if they were allowed to have a renter from the start, which they're not allowed to do when they get owner-occupant financing, but if they could, they'd get about negative $2,773 per year in cash flow. That is after all expenses, including the mortgage payment, private mortgage insurance, taxes, insurance, maintenance, and vacancy. If they were paying a professional property manager, we'd include that too. So by buying the property with a very small down payment, they have almost $2,800 in negative cash flow for the year. If they had bought it as an investment with 15% down, they would have had even more negative cash flow. Instead of $2,800 with 5% down, they'd have $3,382 in negative cash flow with 15% down. So even though they put 10% of the purchase price less down, the difference between 5% down and 15% down, they actually have almost $600 per year better cash flow by doing the Nomad strategy. Now that's pretty interesting to Norm and Norma. They could put less down and have less negative cash flow. Of course, if they put 20% down, they'd have almost break-even cash flow. Actually, it's $126 per year negative, or about $10.50 per month negative with 20% down. But in order to have essentially break-even cash flow, they had to come up with 15% more of the purchase price as a down payment, the difference between 5% down and 20% down. In other words, and this is really important, they could save up about $56,250 more and have essentially no negative cash flow, or they could not come up with $56,250 and have about $2,800 per year negative cash flow until rents inch up enough to not have negative cash flow. How many years could they pay the $2,800 negative cash flow? Well, it is actually $2,773, but how many years could they pay that in negative cash flow before they've spent $56,250? It turns out it's just over 20 years. Now I'll pause to let that sink in. They could afford to pay that $2,773 per year in negative cash flow for over 20 years before they got to the same point where they spent $56,250. Now some of you would argue, but James, they're different. In one case, you still have that money in equity, and the other one, you paid a negative cash flow. And I might ask a couple questions in response. First, what do you gain by being able to purchase the property earlier? The answer to that first question is, you get any returns from appreciation, from paying down the debt on the property, and the tax benefits of owning the rental in the form of depreciation, all of those minus the negative cash flow. So for the 5% down payment property, that's about $15,000 net in the first year, even after you take into account the negative cash flow. So while they've got some negative cash flow, they're probably up net $15,000 in year one and every year that continues. And the second question I might also ask is the negative cash flow of $2,773 going to remain that amount forever? And the answer to the second question is probably not. As rents inch up a little bit each year, that negative cash flow goes down. For example, if rents just kept pace with a long-term estimate for inflation of 3% per year, by the second year, the property that was renting for $2,600 would be renting for 3% more, or about $78 more per month. $78 more per month is $936 per year. So the negative cash flow of $2,773 in the first year is more like negative cash flow of $1,837 in the second year. It's less than $1,000 in year three, and it isn't even negative by the fourth year. So instead of having to come up with $56,250, instead Norm and Norma get to finance that part of the down payment that they didn't need to come up with because they only put 5% down and instead paid a much smaller amount of negative cash flow each year for several years. Now, they do need to be able to cover the negative cash flow. But fortunately, it's not even as bad as the $2,773 per year that I made it out to be. Why? Well, it's not as bad as the negative $2,773 because of the tax benefits they get by owning a rental property. Now, I'm not a tax professional, so check with your tax professional to get the more technical version of how depreciation works, especially for you. But here's my layman's explanation. The government allows Norm and Norma to depreciate the value of the building, not the value of the land, over 27.5 years. What does that mean? If they bought the property for $375,000, and we estimate the value of the land that the property is on as worth about 15% of the purchase price, that means that they can depreciate the cost of the building, which is about 85% of the purchase price, or about $318,750, over 27.5 years. In other words, they can depreciate about $11,590 per year. Okay, you got that, but what does that mean? It means they can reduce the income they need to pay taxes on by that amount. For example, instead of paying taxes on the $72,000 per year that they earn from their jobs, they pay taxes on $72,000 minus the $11,590 in depreciation on the one rental property. And of course, this would apply for additional rental properties as well. So they're really paying taxes on $60,410 instead of paying taxes on $72,000. But what does that mean in terms of actual dollars they save in taxes? It is $11,590 times whatever the tax bracket that would have been in, typically their highest bracket. Now, I'll be a little bit more conservative and estimate it using their effective tax rate instead of the highest. So if they were paying taxes at an effective tax rate of 17.85%, that means by owning this rental property, they get to keep an extra $2,069 in what we call cash flow from depreciation. We call it cash flow from depreciation because it is cash flow they get to take in the form of not paying taxes on their income from their paychecks each pay period that they get from depreciation on the rental properties. Or if they choose not to take it as a reduction in taxes paid from their paychecks from their jobs, they would get it back as a refund at the end of the year when they file their tax return. So what does that mean? It means that instead of having $2,773 in negative cash flow, really what they have is $2,773 in negative cash flow minus $2,069 they're getting in tax benefits. So really, they need to come up with about $704 in the first year, or about $59 per month. So we've talked about appreciation, or the tendency for property values to increase over time. We've talked about cash flow, or negative cash flow, which we also called deferred down payment, depending on the down payment amount. We've talked about the tax benefits of cash flow from depreciation. But there's one more area of return: debt paydown. Each month that they make a mortgage payment with a 30-year amortizing loan, a bit of the amount they owe is paid back. So each month that they make a payment, they owe a little bit less. If we add up all the amounts that they paid off in the first year, they paid off about $4,799 in the first year with 5% down. The more they borrow, the more that gets paid down each month. And the lower the interest rate, the more that gets paid down each month. Since the 5% down payment loan is both the highest balance, remember they borrowed 95% of the purchase price, and has the lowest mortgage interest rate, remember it's an owner-occupant loan, that means that the 5% down payment loan has the most paid off in the first year. Instead of about $4,800 for the 5% down loan, the 15% down loan paid off about $1,400 less, about $3,400 total in the first year. The 20% down payment loan, about $123 less than the 15% down. And finally, the 25% down payment loan, about $130 less than the 20% down loan. So really, the 5% down loan gets the largest debt paydown benefit of all four loan types. If we add up the appreciation, the cash flow, the tax benefits, and the debt paydown, and compare the sum of all of these for each of the different purchase options, we could see that the worst dollar amount of return is from the 15% down payment loan, with about $13,000 net profit total in the first year. The 5% down Nomad purchase, again, if they really could rent the property in year one, which they can't technically do, but if they could, the 5% down Nomad purchase compared to the 20% down payment option are pretty close, about $1,122 difference. In other words, the 20% down payment option makes about $1,122 more from all four areas of return combined: appreciation, cash flow, depreciation, and debt paydown, than the 5% down payment option, but with about $56,250 less invested up front. So instead of making $16,137 in the first year with the 20% down payment rental, by putting 5% down, they'd make about $15,015 instead. Putting 25% down makes the most, about $17,725. But, you know, seeing that the return by purchasing a Nomad property is not that much worse than putting an extra $56,250 down won't really mean that much if it doesn't allow Norm and Norma to achieve financial independence in a competitive time frame. Well, the good news is that the Nomad strategy is faster to their goal of financial independence. It's a little over 6 years faster, in fact. It only takes them 26.5 years compared to almost 33 years if they just buy an owner-occupant property and then 10 rental properties with 15%, 20%, or 25% down, as we discussed in episode 11. So in conclusion, Norm and Norma doing the Nomad strategy seems like it could be a good option for them if they're willing to move 10 times. Each time they buy a new property to live in, as an owner-occupant, it seems to be significantly faster than buying an owner-occupant property, then buying 10 rentals with 15%, 20%, and 25% down. Is being able to retire 6 years faster worth moving 10 times? Only they can answer that question. It seems to be a significantly faster than buying owner-occupant. Now, you could look at additional charts in the show notes to see how the risk profiles compare, but Nomad turns out to be remarkably resilient to drops in rent because each property is held for at least a year before it's converted to a rental property. And even though buying Nomad properties is riskier earlier on with the 5% down payment and higher loan-to-value loans, when we look at a couple measures of risk dealing with debt, you will find that the risk is ultimately reduced faster and lower over time, making it lower risk later on than the other strategies. Now, Norma is especially handy and feels like she could take a property that needs a little work and while they were living in it, fix it up and capture some sweat equity. What's the impact of buying a little fixer-upper property that Norm and Norma move into as nomads each year have on their ability to be financially independent quickly and safely? Is it better or worse? And by how much? We'll find out in the next episode. Also, be sure to check out the Advanced Real Estate Financial Planner podcast to see how having variable property appreciation rates and rent appreciation rates, variable mortgage interest rates, variable inflation rate, and variable stock market rates of return impacts Norm and Norma as they nomad. Does buying with only 5% down really increase their risk? And if so, by how much? I hope you've enjoyed this episode about Norm and Norma considering nomading. This has been James Orr with the Real Estate Financial Planner podcast. Bye-bye for now. Oh, I almost forgot. You can download the newest version of the world's greatest real estate deal analysis spreadsheet for free. Just go to realestatefinancialplanner.com/spreadsheet to download it right now. It's amazing. Bye-bye for now.